you need to show that you can do it some other way than in the big company way with big resources, big budgets. Every single dollar matters. You have to be so much more thoughtful with the strategy and the execution. You get a whole lot smarter about what every dollar means.
Welcome back to Beyond High Street, where we'll journey with Miami alum, now business execs, entrepreneurs, community leaders, pro athletes, actors, musicians, and much more, digging into their experiences on campus and how that time and learnings help shape and create their diverse professional careers. Today, we'll chat with Kyle Schlegel, the Global Marketing Director of Racket Sports at Wilson. He gives a unique perspective of working for a conglomerate like Procter & Gamble to businesses with less financial resources and what it takes to succeed in both situations. Kyle truly gets the power of partners and relationships. Remind me on, I know this year you're not going to Australia, but
correct.
Last year you went to Australia, and how long were you down there, and like what was that like down there?
We're there 10 or 12 days when we go down, and it's great. Most of what we do is before the tournament starts when we have access to the players. And so it's an opportunity to, you know, do press events, certainly activations on the grounds. We have quite a bit of integration with what the Australian Open is doing as the official ball. So it's a lot of conversation with them on even just, you know, what's the on-court theater going to be like in between sets when the players come out to start the match. So we have presence really throughout the grounds. So it was an excellent opportunity to get down there. And if you ever get a chance to go to Melbourne for the event, I would very much recommend it.
Is most of your time with those players, certainly at the level of Federer, around Grand Slams when they're there just for a much longer period of time or when more of the world is watching?
Yeah, for sure. They certainly shut it down when it comes to their partners, you know, a couple of days before the tournament starts. But when we were there earlier this, or, you know, in 2017, we did a satellite media tour with Roger Federer and spent a lot of time with him. And then we did a big press event because Serena Williams, we were launching her autograph racket and at that event as well. So we did a big press event with her and Kei Nishikori, which is a big player for us in Japan and a top 10 player in his own right. So those three we spent quite a bit of time with the week leading up to the event.
And what falls under your purview in racket sports? Tennis and what else besides tennis?
I spend the vast majority of time on tennis, certainly, yep. But anything else you play with a paddle and a racket is within our team. So, you know, squash, racquetball, badminton, pickleball. If you're in the Chicago area or in the Northeast, you know a lot about platform tennis or paddle. So all of those fall into the racket sports group.
And how much of that is U.S.-based or around the world?
It's very global. So, you know, coming from the Louisville Slugger business, where 95% of the business at the time was done in the U.S., the racket sports business, the U.S. is our biggest individual market, but it accounts for only about a third of the business. And it's pretty equally split between the Americas, EMEA, and APAC.
Is it a leap, or could we say, I know you spent some time in Lux when you were in school. Was it a leap, or anything you learned back then helped as you moved from more of a domestic play to some global work?
Yeah, it definitely helped. I think you and I have spoken about this offline many times. It's just the Luxembourg experience was really key for me. And I think it helped just get out of my comfort zone, but it helped with building cultural empathy. It would be very easy to sit in a global role and you create a bunch of stuff and you push it around the world and hey guys, here's the deployment. And one of the things I think, you know, the Luxembourg experience and having worked abroad since then, I try to get away from the word deployment and we're talking about engagement, truly getting to know each other. And I don't think that would have happened if I hadn't had some international experience, you know, in school and then early in my career. Also, and then at P&G, I worked in global roles as well, where you really had to get to know the markets and what was needed on the ground to be successful.
Is there an additional brotherhood of Lux participants or grads? I know walking down the street or buddies, conversations with anyone that's from Oxford, there's a special connection. Is there another connection too, just with the folks from Lux?
for sure. I would say most of the people I'm in touch with today from college were folks that we had that experience, whether we were there together. In most cases, that is the case. But folks, you know, when you start talking about Oxford, I wasn't Greek when I was in college. And so the Luxembourg experience was almost my, you know, my fraternity. We had such this individual experience that many of the students at Miami didn't have. You know, it's a lot of fun up on High Street on the weekends, certainly. But when you've stood in the Coliseum together, or you've spent a night on a train together, and all of that, I think there's definitely a different bond. And if it comes up in conversation, it's this immediate gush of all the experiences you had, and what was your favorite, and where would you go again? So it's a really fun bond.
And were you there a semester or two semesters?
I was there one semester. So first semester, junior year, and I loved every second. And in hindsight, I may have tried to do two.
Yeah, I think I missed out on that. Everyone I've talked to, no one regrets the Lux experience, that's for sure.
Yeah, they do it the right way. And the fact that it's a you know, it's a campus of Miami University. So, you know, exact same tuition, room and board, no issue with credit transfers. It was a really easy experience as well, not to mention a really fun one.
And you mentioned earlier, talking about global roles, that when you were at P&G, that you had some global experience there too. P&G and the accounting firm seem to be the go-to, I think, in the career fair, at Miami. Were you part of that process?
I was, yeah. It's pretty funny that you mentioned those two, because my the first two offers I received were P&G and a bank as well. And so it became a relatively easy choice, because I wanted to get more into the CPG field just because of the training ground. But yeah, that you pretty much described my career fair experience.
Well, I never went through it. I had an internship for a PR firm in DC after my junior year, and worked there, had a job, I guess, going into senior year, which made senior year a little bit more fun, and started there when I finished. But what's the career fair? What was it like? Obviously, I'm sure times have changed 20 years later, but do you remember anything that you tried to do that separated yourself, or, you know, walking in the hall with a lot of other classmates?
Yeah, and I think our professors were a big part of that. I actually got to go to the P&G booth as, you know, almost like a preferred, you know, visitor, because P&G reached out to each of the professors in the you know, the business school, and just asked the question of, hey, do you have students that that stand out that we should get to know? And I was lucky enough that I built a great relationship and did okay in his class, and Dr. Stearns recommended me to P&G, so it was an invite from their team to come visit the booth and get to know them. But then the others were, you know, what kind of resume did you have? What kind of paper was it printed on? It was, it sounds, you know, almost quaint now, but it was definitely trying to share the experiences outside the classroom. And again, you know, coming back to Luxembourg, that was one of those things that that many had not experienced. And so it became a conversation starter, you know, there in that moment at the career fair. But it was also mapping out, you know, who were the companies I wanted to speak to. You've got this finite window of time. How do I get from booth to booth and make sure that I visit each one of them? But I was lucky that there was the P&G connection in place.
And walking the halls in Cincinnati and P&G, I imagine a ton of Miamians your age and older there too at that time?
Yeah, especially at the time, Miami was a heavy recruiting spot for market research, and then a little bit in brand management as well. So, yeah, you know, there were people that I came in with, and then the Miami recruiting team at P&G was really strong. And so we would go back up and then work the career fair and go back up and, you know, work with the business school on, you know, training students how to interview, how to get their name out there, how to get started in a job. So there was this really tight link between P&G and Miami. And so that continued to foster that connection inside the walls of P&G.
And at P&G, did you do the typical CPG every year, 18 months, they rotate you, either brands or different types of the different parts of the business?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's, you know, every couple of years you're moving into a new role. So I spent the first 5 years there in market research. So what they call CMK, and then moved over to brand management at that point. And yeah, in 13 years, I was in, let's see, six different roles in Cincinnati for most of it, but in different sites in Cincinnati, and then 1 2-year assignment in Geneva as well. So definitely saw the company from global to local, from big business to small business, from working in Cincinnati to working outside of it.
It's interesting. Go ahead.
No, but I was just saying, it was great to have that many kind of paths open to you to be able to try a ton of different things.
Yeah, it's a really good perspective, because I spent 5 years at that PR firm I mentioned, which was a dozen people before starting at Octagon, and I always felt I loved the opportunity to work for a small business where you had to do everything. You had to write the press release. You were doing the accounting and billing. You had to show up at 5 a.m. with the live weatherman at the car show. You experienced all of it. And I always thought that was a preferred route over big business, but it was also the only thing I knew. And you know, the older I've gotten, and the more people I've talked to, and just the world we live in now, I've always been impressed at the CPG businesses. That yes, you may have a function, but you also rotate. You rotate, and so you get to learn different audiences and customers and retailers that you're working with, but also different sides of the business. And there's real value to that.
For sure, and I think to be ultimately successful, you need to have both of those experiences. You know, in talking, as I was starting to think about leaving P&G and just trying something new, one of the things that I heard from every single recruiter I talked to was, you need to get out now. And I said, well, what do you mean? Did I do something wrong? And they're like, no, but in order to continue to you know, explore new opportunities in the industry, you need to show that you can do it some other way than in the big company way with big resources, big budgets, you know, A-list talent all around you. You need to go somewhere where you can show that you can do it a different way. And so we weren't quite, you know, 5 a.m. weatherman hits, but you know, moving to Slugger, it was, you know, the budget got cut by 20-fold, and you know, it was a really young team that didn't necessarily have the same kind of traditional upbringing as the P&G team. And so it was great to then experience both of those things. And I like to think I'm a better marketer now, having experienced both, for sure.
What do you think that taught you, going with smaller budgets, maybe not the same quality of either talent around from staff or endorsers, or just with the money that you had? How did you have to figure it out, I guess?
And sure, yeah. I would say, you know, some of it is unique to sports, where relationships became so critical. And, you know, you're right in the middle of all of this. You know, at P&G, you know, your media budget kind of bought your friends or bought your relationships, right? We didn't have embedded relationships with strategic partners outside of our agency network. And so immediately you get into the sports space, and, you know, money is certainly involved, but it's very much about the relationships. It's a pretty small world. And can you get along, you know, with the people that really will make a difference to your business? And then the other part is every single dollar matters. You have to be so much more thoughtful with the strategy and the execution. You know, it was nothing at P&G to go spend $750,000 on a shoot. And now my entire production budget is less than that. And we've got to feed 12 months of content in a social media world, in a global business with, you know, $500,000 of a production budget. You get a whole lot smarter about what every dollar means. And so I think if I end up, you know, at some point in my career back in more of that, you know, kind of that big corporate environment, I would be able to be much more of an asset to that team, because you can break a lot of paradigms and go, yeah, I understand you want to spend $500,000 on a 30-second spot, but guys, there's 100 different ways to get that content in an equally quality way with a whole lot less budget. So I think that was a big part of just kind of rounding out my skills.
And somewhere in that message, you just talked about deploying that content globally. And I know you've talked about it before, of always the challenge of consistency of a message across mm-hmm. all geographies, but I am sure with local nuances of how that culture or language interpret what that message is.
Absolutely. We literally last night, as I was leaving the office, I was talking with our global social media leader, and what we were talking about was, the necessity or not of local social pages. Should all of our key countries around the world have their own Instagram feeds, their own Facebook feeds, Twitter feeds, et cetera, or should there be one global feed? And it's really interesting. There's tons of pros and cons for each. You want to have the ability to localize that content, but they don't necessarily have the ability to create the quality content that we do on a global basis with local budgets. And so it's an ongoing conversation. We don't have the answer yet, but exactly to that point, it's what is that balance of the local cultural nuance versus the need for consistency overall? And so part of the thing, one of the things that we put in place really recently was having a global marketing tracker where we asked the local teams to present back to us exactly how they took the toolkit and how they used it in their local market. So we can evolve what we're providing to them. And that hadn't been done, as far as I know, it hadn't been done at Wilson before. So that was an eye-opener for us as we've done the first couple where you see all this stuff come back and you're like, man, we spent a lot of time creating X and Y and it just didn't get used. But A, B, and C got used a ton, but they tweaked it in this way. Why don't we just help them from the beginning by creating it in a way that's a bit more user-friendly for them to be able to do that? So we're getting into things like, how do you templatize content to enable that small local nuance that'll make it hunt that much harder?
And there certainly is a balance between creating best practices and toolkits from a global level to give to the local markets, but giving the local markets some freedom as they know the audience the best too. There's a game in there that all corporations have to deal with every day.
For sure. And we're more, I would say, you know, back to the relationships comment, we're less media driven as a business and more what we refer to as place of practice and place of purchase. So, you know, place of practice being, you know, our advisory staff coaches, the people that are out on the tennis court with our consumers, that are ambassadors of ours. That conversation is going to be really different in Germany than it is in Spain, than it is in China and Japan. So that's where we provide a lot of that local freedom. And then place of purchase. How do we create, you know, an in-store presence or an online presence that's consistent? But hey, the way a store looks, again, in those four countries is very different. And so how do we provide some nuance there? So we're less, you know, kind of traditional media driven and much more on the ground. And that's where you're face-to-face with the consumer in most of those instances. So we have to allow a little bit more freedom locally to do that the right way.
And your world of a product that typically went into retail has changed, almost flipped on its head to your line of what's a store look like. I mean, the store now is me on my phone to many portals, or it's, I guess, walking down the street to a retail shop. But that looks very different than it did 5 years ago.
In the U.S. alone, we lost almost 1,500 points of distribution this past year in traditional retail. So with Sports Authority, Sports Chalet closing, that was a big chunk of it, but there's a whole bunch of what we would refer to as general sporting goods retailers that have gone out of business just in the last 12 to 18 months. And so the retail landscape has changed a ton. And so we're now looking at how do we overinvest with the people that are doing a really good job of it versus, I think, kind of the traditional mindset was how do we make sure that we're, quote, everywhere? The quality is going to rule the day, and we need to invest in those that are doing it the right way.
Yeah, and that goes back to some of the comments of being big business or small business and more nimble and trying to figure it out, because you can't just pay your way there anymore. Really understanding where the customer or consumer is, where they're buying and what they want, looks very different.
For sure. No doubt.
You mentioned earlier Twitter and Instagram, or do you create local channels per country or sport even, or a global one? What about you and social platforms? Or do you use them regularly? Do you pick one for business, one for family? How do you use that space?
I use the three usual suspects, if you will. I use in very different ways. You know, Facebook, I'm absolutely a voyeur, just kind of what's going on with friends from high school and that type of stuff. You know, posting occasionally. Instagram is really, you know, where my closest friends are, and we're sharing, you know, things going on in our lives. You know, what's happening with our families, vacations. That's kind of the That's the family one. And then Twitter is where I go for sports news, business, inspiration. Just, it's funny, we were talking about this with friends last night at dinner, where, you know, with the news cycle today, it used to be, you know, I'll check in and watch the news, or go to a news organization website, you know, CNN or whatever. I'll go, you know, I'll check, you know, every other day and just kind of see if anything big happened. And now, I mean, you're checking Twitter every half hour to an hour to see what in the world has changed. You know, there's even, you know, recently with net neutrality and everything, it was paying attention almost on an hourly basis to see where that story was going, out of personal interest, but business interest as well.
Are there, you're talking about inspiration there, are there a few Twitter handles, people that to share for me to follow, or for others?
Sure. You know, from a business standpoint, I'm certainly, and, you know, marketing standpoint, the usual suspects of, you know, Ad Age and Brand Week and those folks. Darren Revelle for sports business seems to have a really good pulse of what's going on. But there are brands that we feel are doing things the right way and are really connecting with consumers right now. They're not necessarily in the same space as we are, but there's a lot of things that we can learn from them. So brands like Supreme, Rafa is a cycling brand. Keith, K-I-T-H, you know, in New York. So there's some of those folks that we have relationships with, but they're just doing really interesting work right now. So we follow, you know, what they're doing very closely to see what we could reapply to our business, or where we might be able to reach out to them and see if there's things that we could be doing together.
A tip for the kids at Miami on how to use Twitter, or maybe more importantly, how not to use it?
I don't know that I'm the best example. I've probably weighed into the political conversation a little more than I probably should, if that's my business persona. But, you know, I think it's just follow as many different things as you can. It's such an interesting funnel to see the world, see what's happening in the world, see how it's changing, get outside of the U.S., you know, it's an opportunity, certainly, as global as all the social platforms are, follow things that are going on in other parts of the world. As much as we'd like to get our passport stamped as often as we can to go there, it's a great way, it's a great vehicle to be able to kind of get out of Oxford, get out of wherever you are to see what's going on in the world. I think that comes back to the Luxembourg point again as well, as Oxford is this amazing four-year experience that doesn't always reflect the real world. And so it's this amazing bubble that you get to exist in for 4 years, but do as much as you can while you're there to be exposed to things that are going on outside of that bubble.
I've always appreciated how Kyle thinks, from the type of content and messaging created to his understanding what the customer wants. Make sure to follow Federer, Serena, and all of Wilson's other endorsers throughout the year. Thanks for listening. See you at Skippers.